Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordat. Peter Christen and Bradley Bethel met in an online J.R.R. Tolkien class, which led them to making a documentary film about Peter's time as a National Park Service ranger in Alaska's Arctic. The film, premiered last fall at the Anchorage International Film Festival, features Peter as he and the film crew travel north to the Arctic. Along the way, Peter hikes and muses on his time as a ranger, what he learned and how lessons from Tolkien's Lord of the Rings applies to the many environmental challenges society faces today. Peter, Bradley, and the film's producer, Stuart Muller, join me to discuss the film, including its genesis, when, where, and how it was filmed, and more. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer.
Alaska Public Media is now partnering with an Alaskan auction service so a helpful local team can get the biggest return for the least hassle should you decide to donate your vehicle. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/vehicle.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordak, and today we are talking about the documentary film Ranger of the North. I have Peter Christen, the ranger in the film, Bradley Bethel, the filmmaker, and the film's producer, Stuart Muller, on Zoom with me. Welcome, guys.
It's good to be here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I really enjoyed the film. Let's start off a little bit about yourselves. Peter, let's talk about you. You're chiming in from Eagle River, right? And how did you get to Alaska, and how did you come about being a ranger?
So I first came to Alaska back in 1989, just after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And it's like someone had stirred the state like a beehive, and someone served the state with a stick. Everyone was just running around like crazy, trying to figure out what to do. So I showed up in the middle of that at midnight on one of those midnight flights, stepped outside and saw the midnight sun. A friend grabbed me in the airport, and we immediately drove off to Fairbanks and went up to the Brooks Range and floated the Shinjek River for 2 weeks. So that was my introduction to Alaska. And somewhere in those first 24 hours, I knew immediately that I wanted to live here, and this was going to be my home. And fast forward 30 years, I finished a 30-year career with the National Park Service doing exactly what I wanted to do, which was to help protect those wild lands that I saw on that first trip to Alaska.
And what was your educational background? Like, what qualifications did you have to work for the Park Service?
I had absolutely no qualifications to work for the Park Service when I first came to Alaska. But I knew that was going to be a problem. So I moved to Fairbanks and enrolled at University of Alaska Fairbanks and got two master's degrees, one in Northern Studies and the other one in Natural Resources Management. And then started working as a seasonal park ranger at Denali. I think I got my first job in 1993 there. And, you know, one thing led to another. I took ranger positions anywhere I could to get my first permanent job, and that ended up being in Kotzebue, Alaska. So I worked there for 4 years and got an introduction to Native Alaskan subsistence and just the vast wilderness areas that Alaska's Arctic areas have. And I spent the first 13 years of my career up in the Brooks Range, getting to do all those ranger things. I flew airplanes for a while and, you know, did a lot of work with wildlife biologists and archaeologists and so on. And so it was a great career. I had a great ride. I got to do just some of the most amazing things and live and work in the most remote, really, places in North America.
And being a pilot must have been exciting.
It was great. Someone gave me an airplane and filled it with gas and said, go out there and do good things. And so that's what I got to do. And, you know, seeing, you know, parts of Alaska that you just can't get to any other way, it really gives you an appreciation for just how wild and remote Alaska is. And, you know, and at the same time, how fragile it is, how it could all kind of quickly be damaged. It's just always amazing to me and striking when you're somewhere really far in the middle of nowhere, and then you come across, you know, human activities and, More, it seems like that's what you're seeing when you go up into the Brooks Range.
Yeah, that sounds a wonderful career. And let's go talk with Bradley here. Bradley, you're the film director, I guess. Is that your title?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yes, yeah. I'm the director. And I met Peter. I mean, you know, you just listen to Peter's story, don't you? You want to make a film about him too? You know, obviously. Like, yeah. I met Peter. We met. So I'm a high school English teacher. That's my full-time job. And I'm also a documentary filmmaker. And I met Peter in an online Tolkien class, an online Lord of the Rings class. And I had been wanting, or after I took the class, I realized I wanted to make a documentary about the power of the Lord of the Rings to shape somebody's life, to inspire a way of living. Because you know, for me and so many fans of Lord of the Rings, it's a book that challenges us and inspires us to live better. And Peter, in this class, I learned from Peter how he was particularly inspired by the environmental themes, the love of nature that pulses throughout the story of the Lord of the Rings. And that was exactly the kind of thing I was thinking would make a really powerful film. Again, I'm an English teacher, so I'm really, you know, I the thing I believe in probably more than anything else is the value and the power of literature to change and to shape our lives. And Peter is an example of that. And so I, about a year after the we had this class, I hadn't been in touch with him or anything, but I tracked him down and sent him an email and said, "Hey, Peter, what if we follow you around the Alaskan wilderness and talk about Lord of the Rings for a while and make a film about it?" You know, and then we, a couple of years later, that's exactly what we did.
And Peter, when he said that to you, what was your reaction?
Belief. Like, really? Somebody wants to come up to Alaska and make a film about me? Like, what? Yeah. Didn't even really compute. Yeah. And I guess what Bradley just brought out was something that I wasn't even really sure about myself until we started talking about it. Was, you know, I really have three great loves in my life, besides the love of Alaska. You know, I love my family, and I love the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. And mm-hmm. It has informed my life. It has inspired me, and maybe in many ways was part of the reason why I came to Alaska in the first place. So when he proposed that, it all kind of clicked together. I'm like, yeah, that's something I want to do. And one thing led to another, and we did it.
And when did you read Tolkien initially, Peter? Like, when were you
guys? My dad gave me an old dog-eared copy of The Fellowship of the Ring, which is the first book of the three, when I was 9 years old. So that would have been back in 1973. Yeah. And I read it, and I've never stopped reading it since. Probably read that book once a year, you know, all three books or variations of it. And then through the years, there's been other things that have come out, other books and novels and works by Tolkien. But yeah, it's been a 60-year love affair with the story of the Lord of the Rings and the characters in it and the themes that Bradley mentioned of environmentalism and friendship and love and hope. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what's motivated me the whole time I've been here in Alaska, for sure.
Nice. Stuart Muller is the film producer. You need a producer. So, Stuart, how'd you get involved? And what's your storyline leading up to this?
Oh, man. I got involved through sheer good fortune. I met Bradley in a Tolkien Society Smile, which is sort of like a regional club, except ours is online. And so I had known Bradley for a couple of years. And one day he asked to meet after our Tolkien meeting to talk about his plans for a summer trip in Washington State, where I live. And he knew that I was sort of an outdoorsy, nature-centered guy. And he wanted my advice. And at the end of that conversation, he happened to just mention that after that tour through Washington, he was going to be flying up to Alaska to shoot a documentary about Tolkien and climate change. And I'm a bit of a recovering climate scientist. My background is in environmental engineering, I have a bioresources engineering degree and then a PhD in agricultural and biological engineering, which had a lot of climate change science in it. And so that was a topic that was very close to my heart and to my scientific interests. And of course, Tolkien has been, like both of these guys, a part of my life almost as long as I can remember. I think I was 14 the first time I read The Hobbit in one sitting the night before a book review was due. And and got the bug. This was back in South Africa where I grew up. That would have happened right in the throes of South Africa's transition out of apartheid and into the new South Africa, as we came to call it. And so I think that combination of the amazing social and cultural transformation we were going through, at such an impressionable age, and the timing of Tolkien coming into my life at that particular age really sort of fused Tolkien into my soul in a way that I haven't been able to get out in the last almost 35 years now. And so basically I asked Brady to send me his treatment for the film so that I could give some feedback. And I kind of put that off because so much of my own desire to be involved had bubbled up, and this was not my film project. I was not a filmmaker. I was a higher ed administrator. And so I had to sort of cool my jets a little and then eventually share some thoughts that would be helpful, but not try to talk my way into the project, really. But I guess whatever I wrote got into Bradley's blood, and I sent it off as I was disappearing into the wilderness for a few days, came back a few days later, and there was Bradley asking me if I'd be able to make it up to Alaska in about 10 days' time. and that's how I became involved, really, as initially as a field producer, someone to help handle logistics. I have some experience organizing sort of expeditionary endeavors out in the wilderness, in Africa mostly, but also in the US. And that was initially how my involvement was going to contribute. But as these projects tend to go, there's so many needs, and I just got my claws further and further and further into the project as time went on. And I guess in the end, Bradley felt I warranted a full producer credit. So that's
We were so lucky. Stuart was just absolutely the right person because he's so thoughtful and brilliant and creative and knowledgeable. And it was like, I mean, I can't imagine how we could have done it without him. And so it was just like the stars aligned. Fate. It felt like fate. It felt like destiny, you know, that we all came together the way we did. It was great.
That's fantastic. I was always wondered what a producer was, and you helped me expand my knowledge of that. So
the producer is the person who makes it happen.
Right. That's exactly. That's yeah. Well said. Yeah. Yeah. Same here with this radio.
In case you could change a tire as well.
Yeah. Same with this radio show. Our producer, but he makes it happen. So thanks to Tobin. Anyways, so I want to go into like, so now you got this idea, you got this, this vision. And so tell us, just give us a brief outline of the film. So people who don't know about it, just give us a brief summary of what it is. I don't know who wants to take that one, but yeah, Bradley.
The film is a immersive, meditative journey with Peter through the Arctic part of Alaska, all the way up to Prudhoe Bay, where we follow Peter. So it's unlike a lot of documentaries, we don't interview him along the way. Instead, we follow him on this journey. And then what Peter and I did after we did the filming is we collaborated on the narration, and we wrote the narration as sort of an internal monologue or as a personal essay, kind of reflecting his experience that he has going through and weaving in his reflections on his career, reflections on what he's seeing along the journey, and reflections on how Lord of the Rings and the themes of Lord of the Rings have influenced him, and how they relate to everything we're seeing in the film. And ultimately, we mentioned earlier, the thing that kind of made all this out, or the ideas behind all this and connecting Lord of the Rings to nature, is not just the love of nature that pulses through Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's writing. It's Tolkien's ideas of hope, because ultimately it's a film searching for hope in the face of climate change and turning to Lord of the Rings as a guide for hope. And so that's what we, in the writing process, really wanted to capture. So we wanted to be visually and kind of emotionally immersive in the Alaskan wilderness, and then narratively connect Lord of the Rings to themes of hope and caring for the environment.
Yeah, something that is sorely needed in these times is hope. So very, very appropriate. You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. We're talking about the film Ranger of the North, a documentary that was first aired at the International Film Festival in Anchorage this past fall. Let's talk about the process a little bit. We have this idea. You're all coming to Alaska. So I guess, when was it filmed? Let's start with that, sort of the when, where, and how, what the process was of actually doing this film. Did you start at Peter's house? Did you, like, where? I mean, it started at the Anchorage Airport, but, like, how'd that come about?
We planned for like a year and a half, probably. Obviously we're planning things as we just learned, you know, from Stuart's story, planning things and making adjustments right up until the time that it started. But we filmed in August, the first couple weeks of August of 2024. And, so we Peter lives, you know, near Anchorage, Eagle River. And so we all flew into there. It was me and my cinematographer and sound guy came from North Carolina, and so we flew in. Stuart flew in from Washington, and we spent a couple days with Peter at Peter's house doing the kind of initial planning, and then we drove up to Fairbanks, and we really started the filming. Most of the filming started north of Fairbanks, and a lot of it was in the Brooks Range area. Most of it was in the Brooks Range area, as well as the North Slope. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Prudhoe Bay. We ultimately end up in Prudhoe Bay. And so we spent 2 weeks working on the filming. And then we did come back one more time for about a week to just do some additional, just a few additional scenes. And it took then, about a year. How long was editing, Stuart? I guess
yeah, it took about a year between when we filmed and when you guys went back to Alaska and wrapped on the, recording of the narration.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically, we filmed in August, late July, August. And Bradley and Peter were writing through the rest of that year. And then early the following year, we all convened in North Carolina to take a first stab at recording the narration and working through final revisions of the writing process, which I just have to say, personally, was one of my favorite parts of the whole experience. Mm. Not much can really compare to spending 2 weeks driving through the Alaskan wilderness with a bunch of Tolkien guys, communicating in a language that's just our own, and bonding in that kind of environment. But then sitting down and spending a few days writing and reworking our way through the final sort of narration and the real crafting of the story that was already there but hadn't been translated into an actual narratable script, it was a really wonderful experience, both because it brought back the whole experience, brought it all to life for us to be together again. And just as a creative exercise, it was a really rewarding part of the journey.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was to reconnect with all of you and relive our journey together and figure out how to present that journey in a way that would bring others into it and accomplish what we were hoping to accomplish. It was really great. Because prior to getting back together for that recording, I had been working with Ned Phillips, who's my cinematographer as well as editor, we had been going through the footage and doing some of the crafting of the footage and cut, we shot hours and hours and hours of footage and we had to get it down to a 30-minute film. And so we had spent some time doing it, but then when we all got together to record the narration, that's when we got to combine narration with the footage and really see the magic happen and see it come together beautifully.
So to give a visual to the listeners a little bit, the film is clips of Peter sort of walking through the mountains, a lot of it, and talking, right, or with quotes. And so was that the vision initially of what it was going to look like? And I guess my follow-up question then is what how did you come up with the quotes? Like how did you pick the locations to do that at? We're just driving along going, oh, that looks like a nice spot. Or did Peter, you have certain spots in mind? So maybe we'll start with Peter with this. Like, how'd that work driving up the road, like coming up with this, what you're going to do?
Just to back up a little bit, first of all, Bradley and I never met in person. We were just, we were online classmates. And then had never met Stuart, had never met, the cinematographer and the sound guy either. And so just right then and there, like thinking about it, like, how do I introduce these guys to Alaska and how do we keep ourselves fed and watered and all the equipment safe and dust free, and just introducing the idea of just a wall of mosquitoes you have to work through the further you go north, you know? And so, so my mind was just buzzing with all that, the logistics of that, you know, basically taking five of us and all of our camping gear and getting it all the way up to Prudhoe Bay and back in one piece. But then on top of that, Bradley and I were collaborating together. We were writing a script, and it was very much, I would say, dynamic. It changed as we moved through it, but it wasn't chaos. We had some very clear ideas in mind of some of the scenes we wanted to capture. And remember, on one level, this film is about climate change and showing what that looks like in Alaska. And so trying to find scenes that show that was a pretty big challenge, because, you know, when you think about climate change, you know, there's big storms and big tornadoes and, you know, rain events. But, you know, the idea of capturing that, you know, spontaneously on film obviously is going to be really hard. So finding those softer images of things along our route was the big challenge. So we ultimately were able to do that, but we kind of had to flex our writing and our shooting when those were available to us. And so, you know, for Bradley as a director, I'm sure that was even a bigger challenge, because you only have a limited amount of time and a limited amount of budget, and you want to get those shots, and it's not like you can just come back to Alaska and shoot again. So there was some urgency to it. But I also think we had a pretty good idea of what we wanted to capture, and we essentially got it.
Yeah. And one of the challenges also was just, there was so much more we could have filmed. I mean, there was just so many times when we're like, this is so beautiful, but we had to go. We had to like keep moving. I mean, we could have spent all summer. If you know, there had been no limits on time and budget, we would have just spent all summer filming.
Yeah. I guess for Stuart and Bradley, let's go back to the wall of mosquito comment. what surprised you? What were some of the, was it the wall of the mosquitoes? Were there animals? Like what was your first impressions of Alaska as you, I guess, drove out of Fairbanks, or, you know, as you head up the Hall Road?
I mean, before, as far as first impressions, before we got to the mosquitoes, I'll just say what left me in awe immediately, or what's like, I felt awe almost immediately just at the vastness. I've seen beauty, natural beauty before, but it was the feeling of being in a place so vast and feeling simultaneously insignificant by how just dwarfed I felt by the vastness of nature, but also so connected. was it, it was un, it was really really being there was unlike anything I had ever experienced in terms of relationship with it. And I've done a fair amount of outdoorsy stuff before that, but nothing compared to this. So I was in awe. And then when we got to the North Slope and hit the mosquitoes, I was not expecting that. It was nothing for Peter and Stuart, that we have obviously way more experience outdoors. Ned and Nick, my cinematographer and sound guy, and I, we were totally newbies to northern mosquito hordes coming after us. But next time I will be more prepared. I'll be ready. I'll be ready for that. They will not bother me so much. And you know, they were,
yeah.
I mean, I can laugh at it. And even at that, it was like kind of annoying at first, but then at some point it became funny also. And like, well, this is new and it's a new experience and I'm glad to be having this new experience. So
yeah.
I would gladly go back to the North Slope and experience the mosquitoes again.
What about you?
And I got to give these guys credit, you know, I have an interesting relationship with mosquitoes where I actually challenged myself to go through that entire trip without using bug spray.
Oh.
And just to sort of actually, what's the word I'm looking for? Almost like demonstrate or live the example of just be chill with mosquitoes. And you'll find that although they're a nuisance, a lot of the nuisance is psychological. And I remember talking about this with Bradley and Ed and Nick at the beginning, as there were like panicked squishings of mosquitoes within the car, and my little nature loving heart is breaking every time a mosquito gets squished. But by the end, not even by the end, by midway, everybody just adapts, and you realize that this is just part of being in that environment.
Yeah,
and to see, it was a very satisfying part of the journey actually to see Brad and Ned and Nick just kind of evolve past this reaction to mosquitoes and just be, I won't say living in peace with them, but certainly not living at war with them by the end. And so Brad, I totally agree. Next time we go back, it's going to be a totally different experience from the get-go for you guys.
Stuart, quickly before our break, what any other initial impressions that you remember from Dartmouth Hall Road in Alaska?
Yeah, I had been to Alaska once before.
Okay.
But I have not been to the Brooks Range.
Yeah.
And it really gets into your soul, that place. I mean, I understand why Peter is drawn to return and why it has left such an indelible mark on him. It does feel like, it feels like Middle Earth, to be honest. It feels like a fantastical yet real place that exists on a kind of mythic level. Really is an extraordinary experience.
It is an amazing place. Back to the mosquitoes a little bit, I just saw a film last night called My Alaska Story by a young woman filmmaker from Cordova that I'd highly recommend. And it was amazing. Here's a young woman who grew up in Cordova fishing and being around mosquitoes and bugs. And there's bugs flying all over the camera screen. And she never once commented about it. So it's pretty impressive. You are listening to Outdoor Exploring, Alaska Public Media. We're talking about the film Ranger of the North, and we'll be right back after this short break with the producer, star, and the film director.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. We are talking about the film Ranger of the North. I have Pete Christen, a ranger in the film, Bradley Bethel, the filmmaker, and Stuart Miller, the producer, with me. So, guys, we were talking about sort of challenges and rewards a little bit. We were talking about mosquitoes. What were some of the any other logistical challenges or any other the rewards that came out of the process of when you were up there?
One of the rewards I got out of making this film was Bradley mentioned feeling awe when he first got to Alaska. And I think a lot of Alaskan listeners will agree with me when I say, you know, you kind of get used to Alaska, which is hard to imagine. But you live here long enough and the mountains are the mountains and the rivers are the rivers and the grizzly bears are the grizzly bears. But one of the greatest awards I got was getting to see Alaska through new eyes. And so watching their reaction as we drove basically from South Central Alaska all the way to Prudhoe Bay, and just the amount of land we covered, just watching that sense of awe and kind of renewed my sense of awe in the place that I live. And so that was unexpected and was really rewarding.
Hmm. That's an excellent thing. I love being up here with new eyes, for sure. Bradley,
Stuart, what do you think were some of our biggest challenges logistically?
Well, we had a ranger who knew the area that we were going to and the reality of the wilderness that we were sort of moving through and the remoteness of it. And then we had three filmmakers from North Carolina who knew about what was entailed in filmmaking and the significant amount of paraphernalia that filmmakers bring with them. Hmm. And so one of the sort of initial challenges that we had to resolve was these sort of two worlds that didn't really... Like Peter doesn't really have much experience with filmmaking, and the technical filmmaking team didn't have much experience with real remote filmmaking. And so figuring out how we were going to blend these two worlds together and actually get all of our gear and ultimately two vehicles instead of one up all the way to Prudhoe Bay and back, that was something where I think I ended up proving to be a little bit helpful, given that I have a foot in both worlds to some extent. And then just the sheer time spent driving and filming. Mm-hmm. You know, we have long days with lots of daylight, and you're driving through the most magnificent scenery you've ever seen, so you're constantly stopping to shoot as much of it as possible. And so we were all running on fumes most of the time and shooting until 1-2 o'clock in the morning and driving long days. So there was just a lot of grind to the process. But I have to say, it was the easiest, hardest thing I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
What do you mean by that?
Long hours, difficult conditions, really high stakes, frankly. You get one shot to shoot this stuff, and we're creating something that all of us care so much about, and there's no guarantee about how it's going to work out. We had a lot of rain and a lot of overcast conditions. And yet not a single gripe amongst five people who barely knew each other. Challenges just dealt with. It was a very joyful and fulfilling experience, professionally and personally, despite being a very challenging and grueling experience. And I really think that the beauty of the experience translates into the beauty of the film. There's something about what we went through, a bit of like lightning in a bottle, that I personally see on screen when I watch the film.
It is a lovely film, by the way. It's really a great job with it. That's well said, yeah. Stuart. Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing I can also explain for listeners and just how we did things. So we've been talking about how we drove along the Hall Road, and what we would do is we would drive. We identified somewhat ahead of time some spots we might want to check out, but we would basically drive until we thought we could go off. We could park somewhere and then go off into the wilderness for a little while, find something interesting out there, go hike out there for a while and find some stuff to film and find some places that Peter could journey into, you know, like to capture him journeying through the wilderness. And so one somewhat challenge was also, you know, Stuart mentioned that we had a whole bunch of filmmaking gear. So there was some hauling gear around that we had to do once we like stopped driving and went off for a couple hours, few hours, off into the wilderness. And so then we would be filming out wherever, whether it was the North Slope or the Brooks Range, And like I mentioned earlier, there'd be times where it's like we could keep filming for so long. There's just so much beauty here. We could keep hiking deeper, you know, into wherever we were. Let's just keep going farther. There were so many times like, well, what's in that valley or what's on that mountain over there? Can we keep going? But then, no, we gotta get back, guys. We gotta get back. So we turn around and go back to the cars, get in the cars, and then keep driving and find the next spot. And so all of that, it was, I mean, I love Stewart's phrase, the hardest or the easiest hard thing he's ever done. I love that because, yeah, it was exhausting, but also exhilarating. We were just like so in awe and having so much fun and just so enamored with the whole experience that we really had to force ourselves to like go to bed, go to the tents and go to sleep at night, even though like we had been working for like 18 hours. You know, it's like, no, it's time to go to sleep, guys. Yeah. We got to get to the tents.
And some of the best lights at midnight, you know, up there.
Yeah, exactly. Really, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The
you know, it wasn't just that we were in love with the environment and the process. I don't want to get too soppy here, but we were kind of falling in love with each other.
That's right.
These are five guys, some of whom knew each other fairly well, none of whom have spent all this time together in that environment. And there was a real fellowship that formed in this process. And we're still in touch. We're still enjoying the fruits of that experience and the friendships that grew out of it. And so there was a real real affection both for the process, the environment, and each other that was just imbued throughout this.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Yeah, and that it doesn't always work out that way. Peter, so you're up here. You've really never probably been in a film before. From your perspective, what was it like? Like, what was going through your head? And you had to go tromp off through the woods and eventually save Wisden's, I guess. And how did you sort of process and how did you progress through this?
You know, it was an evolution for me. Originally, I wanted to tell a story about how to face the existential threat of climate change, which is essentially what the characters in The Lord of the Rings do with their own existential threat. And we'll go into that, but read the books. But, you know, after spending 3 decades working with scientists of all stripes, you know, I detected this growing despair among them with the changes that we are seeing in Alaska. So I wanted to tell their story a little bit. Wildlife biologists and glaciologists and fire ecologists, all the ologists, everyone was seeing the increasing likelihood that the things they dedicated their whole lives to, their careers to, were basically going away. And there wasn't much they could do about it either, but watch. There was just this feeling of despair. And I wanted to address that. So that's what I thought we were making the film about. And I remember at some point, you know, I was in the film a lot, you know, of course, because I'm sort of the guide for the people watching the film. But I remember turning to Bradley and I'm like saying something like, you know, this film feels more about me than about the message. He's like, yeah, Peter, we're making a film about you. And it dawned on me, I'm like, oh no, they're making a film about me. Like, you know, you don't become a ranger in Alaska and live in the Brooks Range and all the other remote places, you know, because you love cameras and attention. Right. So that was a surprise to me in some ways. that I had to get over a little bit. And so I channeled, what I did was channel the message. You know, it really, the story isn't about me. I'm the messenger. I'm telling the story. And so that's how I sort of processed it. You know, and you know, it was a very personal thing for me. You know, at first that feeling of despair that I was describing that my colleagues in the National Park Service had was my feeling too. You know, especially as a father, at the time of 3 young boys, they're adults now. I just felt despair at the world we were handing to them. Mm-hmm. But anyone who has kids, you know that you just don't have the luxury of giving up and giving in. You have to fight back. And at first, I kind of did the prepper thing. You know, I bought a somewhat self-sufficient homestead in the Copper Basin where you could grow food, and there was a big salmon run. I was the chief ranger of the big park there, Wrangell St. Elias National Park, and I just thought, well, I'll just bunker in and wait for the worst to happen. But, you know, at some point that became a dead end for me. That wasn't fighting back. That was just sort of hunkering down. I realized you have to have hope. And if we don't fight back, then our worst fears are going to come true. But how do you fight back? That's the hard part. And so that's what the film gets at. And that's really what motivated me to be on screen and be that messenger, was delivering that idea that you have to have hope in the face of things like climate change, because the other option is despair. And to me, that's no option at all.
Yeah, well said. Peter, what point, okay, did you get nervous, I guess is the question. When you had that conversation with Bradley and you sort of went, he went, oh, it's about you. Then all of a sudden you go, oh, goodness. Did that change things for you a little bit?
You know, I didn't get nervous. I just started to own it. I'm like, okay, this is something I know about. It's something I care about. This is the way I get to fight back. And so I just inhabited that role. And hopefully it comes out in the film as somebody who cares deeply about what's happening to this world and wanting to share what I think is part of the solution.
I sort of want to go back to technology. I mean, in the film, it's beautifully filmed. I think there were drones involved. Like, what kind of technology do you guys have? There's shots of Peter walking. Were you guys, how are you keeping up with them? I'm just curious about how, you know, you got some of those shots.
Yeah, well, my cinematographer, Ned Phillips, is really talented. He knows, he's got a lot of experience, and he's great. And so he's, between his experience, he has a really good camera. And so he had his job. Then our sound guy was also our drone operator. So we do have some really beautiful drone shots in the film, too. And so Nick was the drone operator. But whenever he wasn't operating the drone, he was following along with all of his sound gear and, you know, getting the sound of Peter's footsteps as Peter walks through the woods or walks up the mountains or walks through a stream. And so, I mean, Ned and Nick, they did the most work. They were carrying the most stuff and running around the most and trying to get the shots or trying to get the sound and everything. And so they were great. You can really see the skill and the hard work that they put into it when you see the film.
That's great.
And you can hear it, too. Yeah. You know, it's great sound, too.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Torlett. We're talking about The Ranger of the North, a film about Peter Christensen with a heavy Tolkien influence. And I want to talk about that now a little bit. How did Tolkien influence this? I know you all met through it. I mean, maybe one way to phrase this is, like, how did you come up? There's a lot of quotes from Tolkien in the book. And did you come up with the quotes beforehand that you were going to use? And how did Tolkien influence the, when you're really producing the film and, you know, and putting it together?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it was a really dynamic process. I had some ideas for specific quotes or specific allusions I wanted to use ahead of time. But then a lot of it came out in the process of spending a lot of time collaborating with Peter. Peter and I, as I mentioned earlier, we did a lot of we spent months collaborating on the writing. And the way that worked is I kind of posed some questions to him in writing, and he wrote back some responses, and then I would, you know, make comments or give feedback. And we just had this ongoing back and forth as we reflected on our experience, like the actual experience filming, as well as the ideas that we wanted to get across. And for me, the main kind of, I guess, environmental idea from Tolkien that I wanted to get across, or that kind of drives the film, is that throughout Lord of the Rings, I mean, millions of people have seen Lord of the Rings. But what I noticed is that a lot of people overlooked this, what I think is a really important fact, that throughout Lord of the Rings, the good characters, in various ways, have a profound love of nature. And they love nature in different ways. The hobbits love nature differently than the elves do. But their love of nature is very profound and very much defines their culture. And the villains throughout Lord of the Rings exploit and destroy nature, also in different ways. The way that Saruman does it is different than Sauron. But it's very clear. Tolkien was very intentional in associating good with a love of nature and associating evil with a disregard for nature. And we wanted to bring that out when it comes to the environmental themes in The Lord of the Rings. And I mean, one of the challenges is that there's so much that we could have. Peter and I came up with multiple other quotes that we played with and experimented with that didn't make it into the script. Because there really is just so much. And then the other thing that we keep coming back to is it's not just the environmental themes, but it's the theme of hope. And it was also very rewarding for all of us in thinking about specifically how to capture and articulate Tolkien's ideas about hope and integrate that into the film. And like I said, it was an ongoing dynamic process. Some of the ideas I had ahead of time, some of the ideas we discussed and came up with and collaborated with ahead of time, and some of it came out in the process of editing and writing the script and then recording the narration.
Yeah. What about the title, Rings of the North? Explain that to people who haven't read Tolkien and where that comes from and the significance of it.
One of the main characters in Lord of the Rings is Aragorn, and he is a ranger. He is a ranger of the North in particular. And he was the character who influenced and inspired Peter the most. So Peter, why don't you talk about, your relationship with the character Aragorn and how he has inspired you?
Yeah, of course, every boy who reads Lord of the Rings gravitates towards Aragorn. He's the hero of the story. And, he's a ranger and he's out there protecting those who need protecting. And somewhere about halfway through my career, I realized, oh dear, I'm the Ranger of the North. I'm literally a ranger in the farthest North Ranger in North America at one point, out there protecting the things I love. And in no way do I equate myself as a hero or as Aragorn, but the parallels were striking. And somehow, I don't know if it was subconscious wish fulfillment or just coincidence or blind luck, but I ended up in the job description of my boyhood hero. And so I think it was either Stuart or Bradley who proposed the film title, Ranger of the North, and immediately resonated with me because it speaks of a true person who is a ranger in the North. It speaks of a character in Lord of the Rings, and it really captures kind of the heart and spirit of the film. And that was part of what allowed me to process the fact that I was in a film at all.
Nice.
That it spoke to me that way.
So we have Tolkien, we have hope. I do want to talk about, for Alaskans, you're driving up the Hall Road. It's not necessarily a wilderness. There's a pipeline right there. So talk about that, the narrative, sort of the flow, so to speak, of heading north, basically toward Prudhoe and Deadhorse, and how that influenced the narrative. It's sort of like you're on a voyage to like a large development.
My initial vision for that came from just my own lived experience. When you drive up the Hall Road, the Dalton Highway, and you get into the Brooks Range, basically you have two of the largest wilderness areas in North America to the east and to the west. You have the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is like 20 million acres. And then you have Gates of the Arctic National Park on the west, which is another 8 million acres. These are just huge expanses of wilderness. And then you have a pipeline and a road that just basically pierces right through the heart of all that. And so you have this dichotomous experience where you're driving through the most lovely country, on earth and through some of the wildest country on earth, but you're on a road in a car, and right next to you along the entire route is this man-made structure, this pipeline, which is essentially carrying the oil that is causing the climate change that is affecting Alaska. And so you experience all that as you're driving the road, and it's a journey. It's metaphorical and a real journey at the same time. And then you leave the Brooks Range behind and fall towards the Arctic Ocean. And after seeing all that loveliness, you come to Prudhoe Bay, which I don't think anyone can describe as lovely. It looks like Mordor, which if you have seen or read the works, you'll know what that means. It's ugly. It's banal. It's very industrial. Man destroying nature at its worst.
Very industrial.
Very industrial. Yeah. And so I wanted, so that kind of, that was sort of the initial idea for the film. That was the framing of it. And when I proposed that to Bradley and Stewart and the others, it just seemed like a natural fit. And so you go through that journey as somebody who watches the film along with me, and you get to see that transition.
And you get to Ted Horse, and I'm really love to hear the story about what happened there. They let you film? Like, how did you, like, there's a segment in the film without Ted Horse. How did that come about?
It was actually easier than I thought it would be. there are places in Dead Horse Prudhoe Bay that are closed off that you can't go into, but most of it is pretty open. And so we walked around, and I mean, it probably helped that also because we were there in early August. It was daylight, and you know, it was light all 24 hours. And so when we got there, I think the first day we got there fairly late, and then we went out at like 11 midnight. So nobody else was out anyway. So Stuart and Ned and Nick and I initially went without Peter. We just went around Prudhoe Bay ourselves to just kind of scope it out and get some shots of the place, get some establishing shots and just take it all in. And I mean, the whole idea was to capture, I think what Peter was suggesting is like, we had just, you see all this beauty in this wilderness getting up there, and then you get to this oil field and it's so industrial. And so we wanted to capture the juxtaposition between the beautiful wilderness and this industry, and we were able to do it a lot. My biggest concern going into the trip was, what will we actually be able to film when we get to Prudhoe Bay? But it ended up being fine because a lot of it's open. And you know, you can go on YouTube and find a bunch of videos. Like, other people have done it. Other people walk around. Prudhoe Bay and film what they see, and so it wasn't too hard.
And I love the last shot. It's not the last shot of the film. There's more to the film, but there is the shot of Peter with his back toward the Arctic Ocean, right? And I thought that was a great shot. And I don't know, what was that? What were you thinking at that time, Peter, when you're out there looking over the Arctic Ocean?
I'll tell you, there's a story. First, there's a story. If we were going to be challenged by officials at Prudhoe Bay, I think we were going to fall back on Stuart as being an international bird expert.
Yes. Perfect.
He was up here filming and recording birds. And we figured his beautiful South African accent would get us at least half of the way through that story. And then they would let us keep filming. But we never got challenged. So
yeah.
Surprisingly, it worked out.
That's right.
And then... You know, the scene at the Arctic Ocean was an ambush. It was an ambush scene by Bradley. he secretly went to my family and asked them to write down some of the things they thought about me and in juxtaposition to Alaska and to just our life up there. And he read that to me and asked me not to react. As a way to sort of capture all the emotions I think we'd all been feeling on the film. But so when you see me there, I'm hearing things from people out the most talking about me, and it was quite an emotional experience. And you can probably see it. I blink back a gulp here and there.
And these are, wait a minute, your kids were teenagers and they're writing this stuff? Really? That's so nice of them.
Young 20s.
Oh, yeah, young 20s. Yeah. Okay, that sounds better.
Yeah, Brad can tell the story because I wasn't there, but somehow we got those teenage boys to write.
Nice.
Yeah, so the idea was, we wanted to, on film, get Peter. I actually did want him to react facially. You know, I wanted to see the emotions on his face, but I didn't want him to look at me. So what we did is we went out to right on the Arctic Ocean. I had Ned fix the camera right on Peter as he's looking out over the ocean. And I was like, Peter, I want you to just think about our whole experience and reflect on it. And then I'm going to read you some things. And I gathered, I got his family members to send me some really nice things about him. And I read them to him. And so we did elicit from him the emotional response that I was hoping. And we got it on camera. And it was nice.
just a couple minutes left here. You end with a scene of hope, right? That there's a little moment of hope. We won't give it away. We won't spoil it. But, right, you go back to this Tolkien idea of in the face of doom, Mount Doom, there's hope. And the hero may or may not come through, right?
Yeah. I think the idea we wanted to get across was, and we say this, Peter says this in the film, is that it's not hope that leads to action. It's action that leads to hope. You got to go act. You got to do something. Whatever it is, go out and do something. That's what comes first before hope. You don't sit around and wait to feel better and then go act. You just got to go and take action. And so we found a way of capturing that will especially resonate, I think, with Tolkien fans. But I think everybody who sees the film.
It's a wonderful will, scene.
Yeah, we'll really get it, and so you'll have to see the film to find out what it is. Yeah,
that sort of takes us to the end here, and we have a potential release date right coming up here after this show airs.
Yeah, we just decided today, just right before we went on air. What's our date going to be? What's our release date going to be, Stuart?
June 25th.
Excellent. So right after this show's scheduled air. Thanks, guys.
It's been great. Paul. Thank you.
Thanks to my guests, retired Ranger Peter Christen, filmmaker Bradley Bethel, and producer Stuart Miller. We'll have links to more information on their film Ranger of the North on the Outdoor Explorer website. I'm your host, Paul Twardock, and from all the hosts at Outdoor Explorer, go for a long walk, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.